Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Just a few of the memorable images from Sunday at the PGA Championship. Aaron Rye from England closed with a final round 65 to take his first major title. The margin at the end was 3 shots. And that is the third of the 5 biggest events in the men's professional game that we play this year. Cameron Young took the Players, Rory McIlroy, back-to-back Masters champion. Still to come, of course, in June, Shinnecock Hills hosts the US Open and Royal Birkdale in July for the Open Championship. We're pleased to be joined now, as always, by Gary Williams, the host of 5 Clubs here on Golf Channel. Gary, you covered this tournament all week long, as you do with all of these majors. How refreshing is it to have a winner who's so low-key? He's not a lightning rod. He's not performative in any way, which seems to have kind of taken over the men's game.
I think it's kind of ironic because we've been living this whole decade, it feels like, kind of post-COVID advent of LIV Golf, where it's about leverage and how much can I get and how much can the game give me? Whereas this is somebody who has this authentic, genuine level of humility and gratitude. And you use those words to open the show, that stand out, which I don't know if that's the best thing when you're talking about looking it out across the landscape, that he appears to be so distinctly different from so many other people. I think it's wonderful. And I will say this, that as much as he is a tactical player and he's known for not being, you know, blessed with the greatest length, but he is one of 2 players in the last 5 years that's been in the top 25 in greens hit in regulation. The other guy is Scheffler, and he's the only guy in the last 5 years been in the top 25 in driving accuracy percentage and greens hit in regulation. There's nobody else. But I would add this. If you inserted the silhouette of Rom, Rory, or anybody else you wanted into him in that bunker on 13, and then the 2 shots he hit on 15, his second into 16, the roadmap putt he made into 17, that would be their sizzle reel on their major championship demo tape for life. But it was Aaron Rye. So we're like, yeah, it's nice. Nice? It was amazing.
Gary, is one of the great finishes and great back nines, in my opinion, in major championship history. This man's score got better every single day. While others were bellyaching earlier in the week, he was figuring out how to not conquer but survive this golf course. Your thoughts on some of the bellyaching that we heard and ultimately how Aronimink played out?
I thought it was refreshing because we normally hear not bellyaching from the players during a PGA championship. It's everybody else with the platform saying, oh, God, the leader's 13 under, and that's Friday night. So to hear the carping coming from the players, who, by the way, annually laud Kerry Haig for being the quintessential, he gets it. He's the best setup man in the business. I thought it was great. I thought it added gravitas to a championship that is usually getting lampooned by the consumer and the media members. Instead, it was internally from the players saying, you know, this pin position was too hard. And to your point, Damon, about his score improving, you know how I like small tables. I'm not going to give Eamon the opportunity to insert some small joke into this. The company he's keeping now with respect to improving your score from Thursday through Sunday starts with Hogan and includes Player and Nicklaus and O'Meara and now Rye. That's incredible.
There are a couple of welcome returns to the leaderboard over the weekend. We saw John Rahm back, Gary, who had that kind of old pugilistic swagger that we'd kind of missed in this game over the last couple of years. Somebody seemed to have defrosted Cameron Smith as well, who's been absent for a couple of years. Either of those come as a surprise to you?
Probably Cam Smith, not so much John. I thought John, even though his where he was in relation to the guy who won at the PGA a year ago, I thought he put up a fight against Scottie Scheffler at Quail Hollow, and he did what you can't do with Scottie behind you, which was not make birdie on 14 and 15 at Quail Hollow, and then he took shots on, he kind of unraveled. That didn't discredit his overall effort. But I thought, Eamon, I know you wrote about it, Being in this press conference on Tuesday, I thought most certainly it was the healthiest headspace that he has had in the last couple of years. He wasn't posturing so much in a defensive way. It was a little bit more introspection. I think the resolution with the DP World Tour gives him a sense of some tailwind. So I was not surprised by that. Cam Smith, you're right, no doubt. You got to go back a couple of years to him having a pretty good week at the Masters. And for him to get in contention, and really it looked like he might be the guy who clipped and eliminated Justin Thomas and getting to 6-under par there. He had a reasonable chance. And he was doing it really in the manner in which he generally does it, which is hit it sideways and then make, you know, just 200 feet of putts. And you're going, how did he just shoot, you know, 66? That was him. That was refreshing to see him back in the arena.
Gary, May's a tricky month for the PGA Championship. In my opinion, it follows the Masters. It precedes the U.S. Open. There's U.S. Open qualifying going on as we speak. Has the PGA found its footing in May in your mind, or does a return to August and Glory's last shot better fit this championship?
Well, I know Terry Clark, who you guys referenced in the first segment, was asked about this. And look, they've got some challenges as it relates to you know, how plausible that could be. They haven't even gone to their anchor site yet, which is in Texas. And I had a furnace in my basement growing up. I'd rather walk into that than to go to Frisco in August. So that's something that they've got to deal with. But I do think, even though they had a good week, it does not eliminate what I think is a narrative that will be persistent. And I think Frisco's a challenge because they're going to have to sell Frisco. And Frisco is also a venue that you know, it wasn't so much about the holes. It was more about the setup for the KPMG Women's PGA last year. It's a big place. It's kind of like Disney World. It'll be new. It'll be an easy target. I was for May. But now I feel like their identity has been damaged because they did have that. It was the last shot. And now they do feel like they're jammed into a very, very condensed schedule, not only being right after the Masters, but all these signature series events that precede and follow the first major of the year. They still have work to do.
Ryan Rolap wouldn't look forward to that phone call from Terry Clark saying he's going back into the middle of his playoffs in August, Gary. Just talking about Terry Clark, the new CEO of the PGA of America, this was his debut week. Did you read anything into the fact that the governance seems to have been pushed back a little bit? Don Rae, the president, was nowhere to be seen all week. Terry Clark was the guy out front answering on behalf of the organization. Does this suggest to you that the new CEO maybe will get a little bit more runway to kind of take the association in the direction it needs to go without all of these kind of governance hurdles that others have faced?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about the PGA of America, and it's not dissimilar from the USGA. And I think the USGA has found a really nice balance, not only optically, but internally when it comes to officers and staff. And Terry Clark runs the staff. He's the CEO. And the officers who are, you know, they're noble servicemen and women, you know, who are driving interest in the game across the country and around the world. You know, they have very good intentions, but it was not lost on me. And I know you made a point about the Champions Dinner, and I think you're going to see more of that. The idea of, we don't want to look bloated, like, hey, this is an all-expense-paid trip. You know, you represent your section. This is about the players. It's about the championship. I tell you the other thing, and it may be modest in some people's minds, if you're going to have a champions dinner, why is Lee Trevino and Hal Sutton and Ray Floyd and all the others not there? If it means coming off the hip to get them there and to put them up and to make them feel like, hey, this was a seminal moment in your careers, if you're going to eliminate the officers and spouses from the dinners, fill up the room as much as you can with the men who made this championship, the ones who won it.
Yeah, speaking of Raymond Floyd, the next major championship comes our way next month, June, Shinnecock Hills, east end of Long Island. Now that Rory's chase for the in-season Grand Slam has gone wanting. What is the number one story in your mind heading into Shinnecock? Is it Scotty? Is it the golf course? Or is it something else?
No, I think it's that. It's all in this nice stew of the golf course itself, which I think it's fair, and I'm comfortable saying it may be the best championship golf course we can offer the world. And you add the setting, and then you add Scheffler, birthday week, going for the career Grand Slam, like Rory was doing the previous year. And you ask Rory, among priorities, with a lot of tread left still on his tires, what is priority 1, 2, and 3? You're not going to get far until you get to him winning another U.S. Open. Crispy, fiery, bouncy, firm, Shinnecock, proving that he has evolved, he's refined, he's an artist, he's a shot maker. The venue, Scotty, Rory, top of the marquee, I'll be there.
And we know you're a stickler for the rules, Gary, and a stickler for the enforcing of the rules. I've been on a golf course with you. You like to enforce them against others. Garrick Higgle and his little sort of time misstep earlier this week. I assume there's no leeway that can actually be made on this. When he said, you know, I was there, I just happened to be a second late. I mean, it's a fairly ridiculous defense for a professional golfer, right?
Well, a defense for anybody. I don't care what you do. I thought I was on a soundstage at a remake of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and he had just fallen out of the van with Spicoli. I didn't know what to make of what he was saying, but at the same time, I didn't want him to stop talking because I wanted to be more confused because I was becoming more entertained. No, there isn't. But I would ask this question of you guys as we see him meandering down to the tee. Where is Mr. Hand when you need him? He should have been the one who enforced the penalty. I'd like to believe there's no leniency. And yes, you can say you got to be on time, literally top of the clock, 0:00, whatever the minute hand is. But let me ask you two, if that was Rory, and you can say he would never put himself in that position. Okay, is Rory getting banged? Is Scotty getting banged? I know there are a lot of tour players who would say there is no gray area. Everybody would have gotten banged. I'm not so sure about that.
We might test that theory with the traffic heading out to Shinnecock this year because there's a chance somebody else is going to miss their tee time.
My suggestion is stay east of the course if you're going to be at Shinnecock Hills. You get on the west side heading from the city, you could be in trouble. G-Dub, we'll see you out on the eastern end in June. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Back on Golf Today, some of the images from yesterday. Aaron Rye winning the PGA at Arana Mink, becoming a first-time major champion. Really dramatic fashion when you consider that clutch birdie from 68 feet on the 71st hole. That was a big old smile, which he earned. Some upcoming venues of the PGA next year outside of Dallas at the home of the PGA of America, then on to San Francisco, Baltusrol in New Jersey, Congo as it's known, Kiowa, Southern Hills, and Bethpage Black for 2033, not pictured. Who is pictured? Our good friend Jaime Diaz. You know, we talk about major championship finishes. We think about Jack in 86 with that back 930, Phil shot 31 at the Masters in 04. What did you make of Aaron Rye's finishing kick yesterday outside of Philadelphia?
30. Did anybody shoot 30 on the back nine the whole tournament? I mean, unbelievable. The guy, I thought he played perfect golf for his abilities. And I always love seeing that. I just think he maxed out at the biggest moment. He was so poised. He hit an incredibly great sand shot on 13. That was so gutsy because over those greens was brutal. I just thought he was by far the best player on that day. And I know, you know, it's always about the stars and should be in terms of history, but in these isolated moments in golf, when you're on and you're a pro and you have control of yourself, when everybody else maybe is feeling more pressure because you're the underdog, you can do it. And there's a lot of history in golf that's shown that. It's less common now with obviously the style of play. And it was refreshing to see somebody who doesn't carry the ball a long way and yet plays precision golf and accuracy was rewarded. I just thought he deserved it, and I think everybody was really happy for him because he is such a likable figure and obviously a humble, high-quality person. But it translated into his golf as well because that was high-character golf.
I mean, we've talked a lot about the superstars who were on this leaderboard. You know, the John Rahms, the Rorys, Scotty Schefflers, Cam Smith. There's one guy we haven't really talked about in this show yet. I'm curious to get your read on this, Ludvig Åberg. And he's still obviously very early in his career and seems to have a great perspective about the ups and downs of this game. He's a kid who seems to have every tool except the killer instinct right now. Is that an overly harsh assessment, given where he's put himself in the mix a couple of times at Augusta National, more recently at the Players? Then yesterday, there didn't seem to be the belief when it counted.
Well, I don't think it's overly harsh. In fact, it's kind of kind to say he lacks killer instinct, because I have no doubt he really wants to win. He probably wants to win too badly. And he's just learned to deal with those emotions. And I honestly, as long as I've been doing this, and you guys too, I just feel the hardest thing is coming down the stretch on Sunday and getting it done. And Johnny Miller used to talk about it all the time. And sometimes he used the word choke and everybody would get, you know, up in arms. And I just think it's part of the game. It's a human reaction. I'm not saying let Ludvig choke. I'm just saying he's not yet fully in control of his emotions with that much pressure. And he's going to get better at it. And we've seen it many times with Tom Watson, with all kinds of great champions who went through the gauntlet and, you know, failed and felt horrible. But it didn't ruin him. It didn't end them. And, you know, golf, if there's anything all these guys have, it's resilience. Just to get this far, they probably had all kinds of heart-crushing, you know, experiences in golf, even if they're champions. So I really don't worry about Ludvig. He's a very well-balanced guy. He's got a wonderfully well-balanced game, and he's gifted physically. I just felt like he's got it in perspective, and he's dealing with it quietly without complaining. And he knows that, you know, he didn't quite, as you say, just meet the moment. But it's hard to do, and I think he's going to get better at it.
You know, there's a lot of pressure, as you said, Jaime. There's also a lot of rough, and we had firm and fast conditions, tucked pins. I kind of half expected Hale Irwin to kind of walk around there and shoot nothing. I loved seeing it. I loved seeing the players gripe a little bit on Thursday. I love that we had different weather and difficult weather. It felt like a throwback major to me. Did you enjoy it as much as I did? And do you feel like this is what major championship golf should look like?
Well, I enjoyed it only with the qualifier. I thought the pin positions were too penal, in the sense they did not reward good shots enough. And because the greens were so tough to putt, those greens were really diabolical. If you didn't get it within 4 or 5 feet, it was less than 50-50 from 8 feet, like it usually is. It was more like 1 out of 4. It really was, I thought, too stringent with the putter. It became too much of a putting contest. And I didn't want to see a birdie fest either. I think they did it defensively because they didn't exactly know how the golf course was going to play. It was short. The predictions were they're going to bomb and gouge it. But the rough was a lot thicker than we expected. The wind blew a lot harder than expected. The greens were firmer than we expected. And the pin positions, as a result, I thought were draconian. And I don't think Scottie Scheffler was wrong. It made it look like he was complaining too much. But, you know, if you can't just take a run at a putt after you've hit a great shot to 12 feet and you're just trying to make par because, you know, you don't know what it's going to do once it gets past the hole, I think it's gone too far in terms of testing the skills that you want to see. I think you want to see guys take chances with the driver and put themselves in position to hit a great wedge shot, perhaps spin it up there and convert if you hit it right. This was like, didn't matter if you laid up and got in the middle of the green and two putted. If you didn't get it within 3 or 4 feet, you're probably going to two putt. And I thought, you know, there were some people that putted well for a while, but the odds were against it. And I just thought it was a little too stringent. But at the same time, I think it's better to err on the side of hard in a major, especially the PGA of America, which usually has the reputation for making it maybe too easy and being a little non-majorish at times. They went full hog, and, you know, I thought it was a really interesting event, and the right winner emerged, so it's going to be a memorable one.
When I last saw you at Aronimink, Jaime, you were wandering off in search of Padraig Harrington, who finished in the top 20, the age of 54. It's amazing what an undiluted love of the game can do for a guy later in life, isn't it?
He's beautiful to watch. I watched him practice that. I did catch him later on and sat there for 2 hours while he practiced with Pete Cowan and hit drivers every which way. I don't mean crookedly, just every way he could. He was intentionally hitting him off the ground, teeing him up and trying to hit low hooks. He had some kind of special system, some feeling he was working on, and he was really enthusiastic about it. And, you know, he was suffering with the putter at the time, but the next he played great the next 3 days. And yesterday was even the most inspirational. Padraig's a gift to the game. And, you know, he's a big guy. He can, I think, last long because his body is not wearing out. He's got enough power. Obviously, he's worked on speed. But the main thing is the love. And it's contagious. I mean, I just think golf needs more people like that. His Hall of Fame speech was so inspirational. And so was his play yesterday.
Yeah, Padraig is a PGA champ. My question to you is, has the PGA Championship found its footing in May? It's a question I asked Gary Williams. I kind of miss August. Maybe it's because I'm a creature of my own upbringing, you know, waking up and it was Masters, then it was the U.S. Open, then it was the Open, and it's the PGA. But do you like the PGA in May, or are we missing Glory's last shot?
Well, the only thing I don't like about the PGA in May is that, well, there's a couple of things now with the schedule more compressed. It is hard now to fit all these majors in, and I wish there was a little more air between them. But the biggest thing is you're losing some really great sites because it's just too cold. And even Philadelphia, it was windy and cold. I mean, it was fine, but you're on the edge there in the East Coast. And that's, well, let's face it, Philadelphia is one of the great golf towns, maybe the greatest private golf course town in the country. And, you know, they're marginal for the PGA. And think of all the ones you're missing. We went to Oak Hill, and it was cold. And Chicago has wonderful courses, and it's probably too cold. And so you end up with the Sun Belt courses, which topographically are not as interesting usually. And so that's something I think the golf course brings so much character to a championship. You want to have the best, you know, canvas you can, and you want to have the most variety to choose from, and they don't. On the other hand, I went to some miserable August PGAs. But again, they were in the Sun Belt. One of the great ones was in Whistling Straits. So if you go north, but on the other hand, football's looming. There's a lot of considerations. I don't think it's a deal breaker that it's in May. It's not that much better in August. They have the fourth best date because, unfortunately, they're fourth in line. But they made the most of it this time, and I'm sure they can, you know, with some ingenuity, maybe go to some new courses we haven't seen and kind of build an identity that way, because there are a lot of wonderful, great courses that are built in kind of the golden age image.
Lest we forget Palm Beach Gardens in August when Larry
I
Nelson
was there in 87.
Won 39 years ago. Not the first time Larry went to combat in a swamp, it has to be said. Jaime, always great to catch up with you. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, guys.
We're back on Golf Today. This was the scene on Sunday. Aaron Rye taking the title in the season's second major at Aronimink outside of Philadelphia. The victory marked Aaron's first career major and first win by an Englishman in this championship in more than a century. How about Lanny Watkins? He knows what it's like to win a PGA. Back in 77, that summer, August, the title over Gene Littler, sudden death playoff, was the first playoff at the PGA in 10 years, and first sudden death playoff in a stroke play major. Lanny began the final round 6 back and closed like the stallion that he is.
And this is a stallion's resume, 21 career victories on the PGA Tour. All the way back to 1970, won the U.S. Amateur Championship. Of course, that major, he's won the Players as well. And of course, an outstanding record in the Ryder Cup, including as a captain. It's time now for our past champions chat, and Lanny joins us. Lanny, it's always good to see you, and I guess it's a sign of how much you've won that we invite you on for a past champions chat, and we could talk about either last week's tournament, which you won, or this week's tournament, the Byron Nelson, which you also won. But let's start, if we can, with the PGA Championship. What did you make of Aaron Rye's performance yesterday?
You know, I've watched enough golf over the last couple of years and seen Aaron play that I had a feeling watching that thing that when he got his nose out front, I just felt like he wasn't going to make any mistakes to give it away. Somebody was going to have to come get him. The thing I like that he does is he puts the ball in the fairway. I'm watching the major guys, McIlroy, Rahm. Looks like the last time they hit a fairway was about a month ago. I was really delighted to see the setup at Aronimink really make the driver important. And I think that's really the basis of his win, was he just kept putting it in the fairway. And that gave him a chance to get irons close to the hole.
You know, Larry, there was some belly aching early in the week about the pin placements in the course setup. Yet we had rounds in the 60s all 4 days. Aaron Rye's score improved every single round. What was your reaction just to some of the griping that we heard early in the week?
You know, it is what it is. Players, if it doesn't work out for them, they're going to complain. I loved it when everybody else complained because, you know, to me, everybody's got the same conditions. You just go play. And, it, you know, I used to love to watch Tom Watson get ready. He never complained about anything. Yeah, if it was raining, he'd stick his rain suit on in the locker room and go play. You know, he didn't, you know, care about what the conditions were, the setup was. Just going to go give it everything he had. He was always a good role model for a lot of us.
On the subject of player complaints, Lanny, you did a lot of work at TPC Craig Ranch, which is the venue for this week's Byron Nelson Championship. Were you a complainer as a player, and are you expecting to hear any complaints from the current generation of players when you're out there this week?
I hope I wasn't. I would like to think that I really accepted what was there. I probably complained more early in my career than I did later, because it, as you get older, you kind of get a little wiser and understand that, you know, if you don't complain, it kind of gives you an edge on everybody else. So I liked it if it was hard. I liked it if everybody else was complaining, because we were all playing the same conditions. Do I expect to hear some stuff this week? Yes, a few places, because, you know, we did make some major changes. The green complexes are a lot more severe and undulating and imaginative than what was there before. The bunkering's a lot tighter around the greens. You know, we did some exciting things. We put the water more in play on, you know, three or four holes, five holes maybe. And we've got a beer-rich green on number four, pretty interesting one that's going to make that a very challenging par three. So we did some things to make it not only harder but more interesting.
On that note, Lanny, how critical was moving some of the bunkers so the players from the tee would have something to think about it and not just be able to either blast it over the bunkers and not even have to even consider them?
Well, 100%, Eamon. And you know, here in Dallas, I've been here long enough to know that the predominant wind is out of the south. You know, 70, 80, 85, 90% of the time you're playing golf, especially in the spring. So, you know, holes that are into the wind, the bunkers are probably 300 to carry them. Some of the holes that are downwind, holes like number 8, number 10, I've got bunkers that don't even start till 320. And then it's usually a complex of them, so it's probably 340 or more to get over them. So we've tried to make driver important, much like what you saw at Aronimink. We won't have the rough, but we'll have some things that will be in the bunkers here before. We're relatively flat. If you hit it in a fairway bunker, you didn't even worry about it at all. It was firm, flat, easy to play out of. We essentially eliminated every bunker on the course and went back in and re-bunkered the whole place.
Last year, Scottie Scheffler won the CJ Byron Nelson with a score of 31 under. Now, obviously, he was playing a different tournament. It was an 8-stroke margin of victory, Lanny. But do you anticipate particularly low scores this week?
Well, it depends on the weather, Eamon. Honestly, if I would like to see the greens a little faster and maybe the surrounds around the green cut down a little bit more so the balls chase off the edges. The course may be a little soft. We've got some rain coming in. That always means scores will be a little higher. It also means the fairways will play a little wider. Early on, I thought if it played like I'd like, I thought somewhere in the 12 to 15 under range would win. Kurt Bowman, my partner, thinks it's going to be more like 18. We'll see what happens. But it just depends on that South Texas wind this time of year.
Well, even 18 under would still be quite a higher winning score than was customary at this golf course. I'm curious if you're going to pay attention, Lanny, to how closely will you monitor it just for the idea of potentially tweaking something that you decide after the fact, you know what, I don't like how that played in the field. I think it needs a further adjustment going forward.
Well, I think we'll be watching this week. I'm actually going out this afternoon. I'll be out there tomorrow and probably several times during the week. And we, the tour and the salesmanship clubs, charts every shot all week, every single shot that's hit. So we'll have those charts to look at when the tournament's over. You know, we'll examine some things. You know, there'll be, I don't know how many tweaks there'll be. I would like to see, you know, some surrounds around the side of the greens just play faster. It would put water in play on holes like 14, 15, 18, where if the grass on the banks is a little bit long, it won't be as much in play. Things like that. I, you know, like to make the shots worthwhile.
Lanny, you had a World Golf Hall of Fame career, wonderful broadcast career as well, and now you're doing, you know, design work at a PGA Tour event. How much pep in your step do you have kind of maintaining a connection to the modern game and the modern player? Because not everybody gets that opportunity, Lanny.
Well, no, they don't. And, you know, I've been lucky. You know, my boys still play at a very high level. Both of them carried over 300. So, I mean, really the only reason I even play anymore is so I can go out there and play with them and they can make fun of me, which they do on a regular basis. So that keeps me connected, you know, to the game through them. You know, my youngest, Tucker, grew up playing with Jordan Spieth, all the junior stuff around here. You know, one of them played at Wake Forest, one of them played at Arizona. They've got friends. I still belong to Preston Trail, where Spieth and Scheffler practice a lot here in Dallas. So I feel like I'm kind of in touch with today's game, and I stayed in TV long enough to be involved in it. I'm really enjoying this part of it. It's a lot of fun. Invited has given my partner, Kurt Bowman, and I great opportunities to work for them and do a lot of projects for them. And, you know, I think we've done a great job for them, and we've been, you know, real excited to keep doing things. We hope they give us plenty of work going forward. Mm-hmm.
You've always paid a lot of attention to what's going on in the game, Lanny. We've talked on this show about potential changes to the PGA Tour. Since we last talked to you, it now appears that the LIV Golf Tour is faltering some with the Saudi funding going away. If that does actually go away, if LIV itself goes away, has it added anything to the game in your mind? Did it make anything better over the last few years?
Well, the only thing it's really done, Damon, is grab the money up. I don't know. I thought it was a money grab from day one. And I think you're being generous, Eamon, saying that it could go away. I think pretty much all of us are wondering where the hell they get that kind of funding, you know, to maintain what they've been doing anyway. So that's going to be interesting to watch and see. But it also, you know, brings a, you know, it may have to redo some thinking among the, you know, tour headquarters, not just on guys' access, but, you know, how much money is the regular tour going to keep playing for? You know, there won't be any competition if there's no LIV. Do you still play for $20 million a week? I don't know. That's the $64 question down the line. I think it's going to be interesting to watch and see how things transpire, you know, between the American sponsors and the tour, and see where it all goes. You know, with no competition against the tour, it could be a whole different situation.
Speaking of scheduling, you, of course, won your PGA Championship in August. What are your thoughts on having this PGA Championship in May, as we do in the modern era?
Well, it's interesting. I think the schedule is almost a little too tight. I think it doesn't give the guys a break. It really doesn't help longtime tournaments like the Byron Nelson and Colonial, who have been mainstays on the, you know, PGA Tour forever. They've always run great events and honored terrific charities, and I think that the schedule just gets a little bit too tight. I always liked it in August. I was a hot weather player. PGA was my best major. I had, you know, win 3 seconds in the third, so, you know, I liked it in August, but you know, it's just, it seems like it's awfully, you know, tight time frame, especially with the elevated events and the majors, you know, and, you know, you start really taken away from, you know, really special events like the Byron Nelson, CJ Cup Byron Nelson and Colonial.
Yeah, you were pretty strong in August, and the month of September, you weren't too bad either, Lanny. Thanks for the time. If any of the players get a little too mouthy this week, take that club behind you and you can kind of hold them off and keep them out of your face. We appreciate a few minutes, buddy.
You bet. Good being with you guys as always.
One of the greats. Now, Rich Lerner wasn't at that PGA Championship that Lanny won back in 77, but he's seen more than a share of them since. He'll be here right after this break to relive the week that was at Aronimink. Rich Lerner joins us now. Rich, it's good to see you. What's your verdict on Aaron Rye? He seems a refreshing character in this era, just a guy who's willing to let his clubs do all of the talking for him.
Yeah, it's hard not to like Aaron Wright. Good to be with you, Eamon and Damon. Was that a classic yesterday? No, we tend to like superstars winning our major championships. But Aaron Wright's a good player and a good man, and he played a great round and won a major. And I promise you, if that were Rory or Scotty, played the last 10 holes in 6 under par, having gone 67-65 on the weekend, we'd still be on the set here at Aronimink, and I'd be chopping it up with Brandel and Paul. Because it was that good. It was an exceptional display of ball control, intelligent decision-making, steel nerves. And is Aaron Rye going to dominate? Are we ushering in the Aaron Rye era? No, but he's certainly good enough. And I think the lesson here is that it applies to a lot of players out there. Diligent players won't dominate, but if it all comes together, if the process meets the potential, meets the right place, and Aronimink was absolutely the right place for Aaron Rye, well, then you can have the day of your life. And with respect to his character, I think we're in a world of look at me. What's in it for me? And frankly, across the broader culture, I do think people are sick of it. We glorify ruthlessness, step on your throat when at all costs. I wrote about this on Wednesday night as it relates to sort of character and attitude, and that we've been seeing some good examples of that with Cameron Young at Doral, with Matt Fitzpatrick, and last year Tour Championship with Tommy Fleetwood. Attitude, gratitude, humility, sport as a mirror for society at large. And, I wrote that virtue and victory do not have to be strangers. And so I think, that's sort of the essence of Aaron Rye. And I think that's why, his win resonated.
Rich, as Aaron had a busy Sunday night, did not make it over to the live from set. Had he been on set with you and Paul and Brandel, what were some things you were looking forward to asking him?
Well, I certainly wanted to ask him what he did this week that he had never done before. What parts of his game were elevated in a way that they had never been? That would have been one. I would have asked him why the golf course was such a good fit. I would have asked him, why the decision, which turned out to be a good one, to go down less than driver on number 15, which was close to 530 yards. I would have asked him about his upbringing, the sacrifices. And I think we heard some of this in the press center, the sacrifices that his parents made. I would have wanted to learn more about his wife. And you can't undersell the impact there of, having someone in your world who understands what it is you do, the nuances of the professional game, to have an ear, someone that steeped in the sport by your side. So there was a lot to that we would have done with Aaron, but I understand he was busy. There's a lot to do in the immediate aftermath of a major championship. And we'll get our chance at some point, no doubt.
Rich, there was a lot of conversation this week about the golf course setup at Aronimink. Mm-hmm. And I guess we've been conditioned into expecting that the golf course setup is there to entertain the viewers at home rather than to test the competitors on site, which is what this one clearly did. What was your verdict on the setup for the week?
Yeah, I thought it was good. It's Donald Ross. And I think really, the key here was the weather. The weather gave us a firm, relatively firm and fast track. Had it been soft, we'd probably be moaning that it was too short. We'd be talking about the equipment. We'd be talking about, where are the trees? The trees are the last line of defense against the modern player. The good weather, cool and breezy, followed by warm and sunny, made it difficult to hold these fairways, which I think probably was the surprise factor from the start of the week. We looked at these 40-yard wide corridors and said the guys are going to eat this up. But they were canted and tilted, and you had to be precise. And then, if you were offline and unable to control your spin, with where they put the hole locations, it was a big ask. It was a tremendous challenge for these players. So I think Aronimink did well. I don't, my thought was, early in the week that if it was wet, and this was, you said to look at the numbers of the three previous tournaments, PGA Tour events, I'm not talking about 1962, that were played at Aronimink. Keegan Bradley won it, it was a 20 under, you know, when it was sopping wet, and then it was 10 and 13 under Justin Rose and Nick Watney. And I thought it would be 10, 11, 12 would be the winning score, and we were at 9. And six of the last 10 PGA championships have been won at single digits. So oftentimes it is weather dependent in the modern era. But I think, Aronimink did well. And I know, having spoken to people on the championship committee at Aronimink, they're thrilled with the way that it played out. It was a good test for the modern player. And I think it gave guys, the shorter hitters like Aaron Rye, a legitimate chance. And remember, yesterday was set up extremely short by today's standards. It was 7,100 and 62 yards at a par 70. Granted, but Rye's the 160th ranked player in driving distance. He's only at 288 off the tee, but he won with precision. And I think, people like Paul and Brandel have been, advocating for something like this that gives, that puts a premium on accuracy. The game can't just be bomb and gouge. It was not unlike, not exactly in setup, but the winner that we got was not unlike the U.S. Open in Pennsylvania a year ago at Oakmont, J.J. Spaun. A solid, unremarkable player. Who landed on the right golf course. And, I remember Oakmont was screaming for someone to answer. And no one had the answers until J.J. Spaun, off the 40 on the front side, shot 32. And like Aaron Rye, hit some phenomenal shots. I'm thinking, Spaun's case, driving the green at 17 at Oakmont and then making the 64-footer. And similarly, Rye hit some phenomenal shots and made the big putt, the 68-footer at 17. So good test. And Aronimink, I think, comes out of this as one of the winners of the week.
Rich, you've covered this great championship in both May and August. Do you think it's found its footing as a May major, or would a return to August give it that more distinct voice as Glory's last shot?
Yeah, I mean, I concede that it had somewhat of an identity as the last one of the year. And I've heard from friends and fans in the game that the major schedule's too condensed. They miss having something in August. But I think in May, you get variable weather conditions. We saw it this week, a little bit of cold weather and breezy weather, sort of classic northeastern weather. And I think we've proven that we can go with some risk. We can go to the northern courses, Oak Hill in 23, and now Aronimink. But we also had warm weather. We'll see next year. I mean, we're going to go to a complete unknown in Frisco, PGA of America's new headquarters, where, we could get, terrible thunderstorms. It might be 90, 95 degrees. And then maybe we'll change our tune. So I think it's fine where it is. I wouldn't be opposed to going back to August, but I think there's some benefits to being in the month of May.
A lot of attention on Scottie Scheffler's putting this week, Rich. Quite a few short misses from Scottie out there. Is that symptomatic of just the greens at Aronimink, or something more worrisome? Because if it's the latter, the greens at Shinnecock aren't much better than the greens at Aronimink for a guy who's struggling.
I hesitate to use the word worrisome. I know where you're going with this, only because it's Scottie Scheffler. But undeniably, this has been an issue for Scotty. Brandel did a breakdown last night. He, it's hardly perceptible, but, Brandel zeroed in on it. And he thinks that the heel of the putter is up off the ground a little bit. That's in part reason why he's missing so many short putts. This has been going on for some time now. I will, give Scotty the benefit of the doubt. I would say it's a mild concern, Eamon, and it cost him this championship. There's no doubt.
Rich, the LIV golf gang seemed wide awake at Aronimink. You had John Rahm, Cameron Smith in the mix. Joaquin Niemann had a fine week. Do you think that's a coincidence, or do you think there's something to do with kind of the uncertainty of the future of LIV golf?
It's a good question. And Brandel and I had the conversation last night. You know, Brandel and Paul, and I think with good reason, there's evidence to back it up, believe that having gone to live a number of these, you know, players, I'm talking about the guys, Rahm and Cam Smith and so on, sacrificed legacy for money, and it cost them. They haven't played well in the majors in the last few years. I countered that you know, can we legitimately prove that when there are cases of guys who didn't go to live who are also struggling to emerge at the major championships? Patrick Cantlay, Jordan Spieth, until yesterday, Justin Thomas, you know, hasn't won a major since 2022. So I've always maintained that, to me, it's not a surprise. I think both things can be true. Playing on live where the competition just isn't as good, the travel's more rigorous, it's not, it doesn't lend itself to preparing properly, I think, for the rigors of major championship play. But at the same time, these guys were great players before they went, and I still think they are great players. And, you know, will be no surprise to me when John Rahm wins a major. He will win another major simply because he's a great player, and I do think he'll figure it all out at some point. Cam Smith, you know, it's hard to argue that the move to live did not come close to destroying his career. To see him come back and play the way he did, good for Cam Smith. You know, that's the guy that we remember, the guy who can roll the rock, good short game, didn't hit it very straight yesterday, but, you know, that's sort of Cam Smith. So, yeah, I mean, I just think they're great players. You know, and I think Neiman will have his day at some point. And certainly Rahm, you know, the one I think that's, you know, most interesting and most concerning at the moment, Eamon, you've written about him a lot, obviously, is Bryson DeChambeau. You know, DeChambeau's lost at this point. You know, he has to decide, what do you want to do? Do you want to be a competitor or do you want to be a content creator? Make up your mind. I don't think he can be a content creator and be a great competitor. I just don't think it's possible in this day and age. And by the way, the clock is ticking. With Bryson. He's not a kid anymore. He's 32. You know, before you know it, you're 37 and maybe the window starts to close. So Bryson has a lot to think about here in the coming months.
Rich, it's always great to catch up with you. We look forward to doing this again after Shinnecock Hills in the US Open in just a month from now. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it, Eamon, Damon.